thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business and investing news source. Today's featured guest, David Morgan, the Silver Investor.
Welcome back, David.
Thanks for having me. Great to be back with you, especially at the end of the year.
Some of my favorite precious metals websites, 70% of the articles that pop up are on Bitcoin and cryptos. I mean, there's a lot of interest growing in this area because Bitcoin shares a lot of similarities with the yellow metal. The most divisible, I think you could argue, or at least as divisible as gold. It has some interesting characteristics, and it has some drawbacks, too. Tell us what you think.
One, I think it's definitely demonstrated that crypto space is here to stay. Even first out of the gate has a lot of merit because someone's got to start it. It's unique. It is an alternative currency, which I'm all for competitive currencies. I'm very much for decentralized currencies. Bitcoin, not only the security issues we'll talk about later, but the way it was designed is, one, it's sluggish. I mean, the amount of transactions it can do per second is pales in comparison to, say, what a Visa card can do. Also, the amount of electricity that's required per, you know, new coin or new block, really, is substantially greater over time. I think that in the long run, that probably the blockchain's here. Absolutely going to stay, and there will be manifestations. I'm not sure that Bitcoin will emerge being the absolute leader. I think it will continue to be the leader for some time, but it may be usurped by another one, two, or three. That part of it is store value. I would go on the other side of that argument. There's money. One is commodity money or precious metals money, and the other is legal money. In other words, what the government defines as or individuals collectively agree to be money, which is some type of a legal contract that everybody abides by. And that's where crypto space is in total. Now, there are some, and we were involved in one, actually, that melds the two, which is a precious metals-backed crypto token. And you can take your tokens and actually cash them in for physical silver if you wish to do so. So there's some, my friend Chris Duane, who's adamantly opposed to Bitcoin, and he makes a lot of reasons that make sense to me. And he also states emphatically that there's no marriage that can be made between the blockchain and precious metals. I differ on that, but I also am old enough, and I'll quote or state maybe, quote unquote, wise enough to make sure that it's proven. And that's why this one that I'm involved with, I've got my money at risk, but I haven't asked any of the membership of the Morgan Report or anybody that's on the free email list or listens to an interview like yours, Chris, GoldSeek, to get involved. They wish to. That's their choice. But, buyer beware. Just because I'm willing to risk a fair amount of money on this idea doesn't necessarily mean it will, become something that's viable in the marketplace. It's another one out there. It's basically got a soft launch right now, and I'm going to hold back saying much more, Chris, because, we have paid membership and a free newsletter. Of course, they get the best thinking because they pay us. And we're doing pretty much the entire January issue 2018 about this silver-backed cryptocurrency.
Last week, it was all over CNBC. You may have seen it. A trader was apparently making $1 million bet with options, calls, that Bitcoin would hit 50,000 next year. And if it hits 100,000, he gets a 30-to-1 payoff for his hedge fund and fund clients. Bitcoin, it has the exact volatility characteristics of a call option. If you bought it at 500 to 1,000 in the last 12 months, and it shot up, 15-fold, you only had $1,000 at risk per Bitcoin. But you made an enormous sum on your money. And he believes that despite the introduction of the CME and other futures markets, the volatility will persist. And he would absolutely refuse to make a prediction, which I think was wise. Anyone who studied, Nassim Taleb's Fooled by Randomness, Black Swan, and of course, anti-fragility or anti-fragile. The one thing you can count on is that you don't know. And then you build a strategy around that. There might be biases, trends, 10 to 15-fold move in a year. We're not going to see that every year. Are you still somewhat bullish on Bitcoin?
Well, I'm neutral on it. I mean, if you look back to my original one only article, I've written it in the Morgan Report privately, but in the public domain, I wrote my two bits about Bitcoin. You can type that into Google, my two bits about Bitcoin, David Morgan, and find the article. I basically said, look, who am I as a free market advocate to say that the market doesn't know more than they always defer to the marketplace? And if Bitcoin is a great thing here to stay, then the market will decide that. Personally, you know, my views are already expressed, so I expressed those basically in the article. But I did say, and was quoted in a crypto panel that I was asked to participate in, and I was probably the least knowledgeable of the four panelists, but the moderator said, well, you wrote about this, and thinking, oh boy, here we go. Can't take back what I wrote, but I stand by what I wrote. Quoted that if Bitcoin gets to the level that basically it's at now, I didn't give a price, but I gave it enthusiasm, kind of a parameter, then I can't see where governments won't raise an eyebrow and start to mitigate the situation. So that's what I said in that article well before it announced. This is the situation I think we're witnessing now. Some of the things that Chris Duane points out about, you know, money laundering and, you know, going to some of the exchanges and saying we need the names of the people that have more than $20,000 involved in Bitcoin and that kind of thing. So big brothers out there. And this is what my bigger question is, that beyond security, which I think is number one, the second most important in my thinking is it really decentralized? And, you know, if you go to a silver coin or a gold coin, that's pretty decentralized. I mean, if you go into a coin shop, pay cash, and the proprietor puts down public on the form saying, I sold it to the public, and you walk out of there with, you know, half ounce gold coin as an example, and 3 months later you go over to your neighbor and you buy the four sets of used skis and boots or whatever, you know, from the garage sale, and you pay him in gold. That's a pretty anonymous transaction, and that's about as decentralized as you get. If you pay him in Bitcoin, is are you going to be tracked or not? You just no, unless or if and only if, you know, if you become a target of interest, which for a transaction like that, why would you? But my point being, still somewhat skeptical, what increased my skepticism was at the Anarchapoco gathering last year where I was asked to speak on the financial side, listened to the, speaker's dinner later in the event. And one of the prime Bitcoin guys gave a very, very good lecture and a very honest lecture. And his basic statement, I don't want to misquote him, but the basis of it is that if you think that Bitcoin is totally anonymous, you better think again. That was the essence of what he said. So that is a concern. And, you know, if you really want to be anonymous in, you know, transactions, you can use precious metals. Now, that's, you know, depending on what jurisdiction you are, you're required to take capital gains and all that. Well, yes, you are. I'm not trying to circumvent anything that's on the books. What I am saying is that if you look at the traceability of something that's on a ledger that never goes away and can't be deleted versus something that you can, you know, barter with, there's a wide divide.
I'm a firm believer in freedom, personal freedom, and anonymity, the importance of anonymity. If you're looking for that characteristic in your wealth, and there are times in history, not so distant history, where that came in handy, that times when maybe you need to leave town in a hurry. As you know, John Law found out the hard way as his carriage was filled precious metals. He escaped France. He couldn't procure most of his wealth. Monero is an alternative. And then, of course, there's Komodo. None of these are super user-friendly yet. It's not like, you know, the everyday non-computer user can just sit down and swipe their Visa card. I find it very disturbing that people are still bringing up the idea that cryptos are all about subterfuge and shady under-the-table deals. You know what I find interesting there? I was early on in the internet and email, and I'm sure you may have been as well, and that's all I heard in the late 90s and early 2000s. Those who ignored that from 95 to 2000, 2001, they fared pretty well. I take that as a positive sign. On almost all the mainstream channels, I can show you at least six interviews with leading TV personalities, all of whom were extremely negative on the guest and on Bitcoin. This has gone on for years, and only now is that theme starting to change a little bit. So I think adoption is still in the early days here. I'm thinking maybe 96, 97 internet, because the institutions are only now getting involved. And, you know, I listened to a very clever trader, and he pointed out that what Wall Street likes to do is have a new toy. In the commodities futures, they really haven't had a new commodity, i.e. toy, in about 25 years. They've only just begun to play with this new toy, and that they will ramp it up to spectacular heights. Let's move on then to Silver. Give us an idea, you know, whether or not you see better times ahead in 2018.
Well, I do. For a while, I want to digress back to 2015, about this time of the year, 2015, very much the end of the year. And I called the bottom, finally. I missed a few, and I admit it. But I said, finally, I'm putting in my, you know, put my neck out again. This is it. So far, right? We had a print below 14, I believe, the end of the year, 2015. I said, get ready for a big rally. And we positioned ourselves on both the investing side and the trading side at that time. And we watched the silver market go from under 14 all the way up to about 20 and a half and took profits on our stocks. And the stocks outperformed the metal significantly, not to say that that wasn't a significant percentage rise going from 14 to 20. Certainly it was. But if you took our favorite pick at that time, which is AG, periodic symbol for silver, which is also the symbol for First Majestic, it went from roughly 250 to 18. So that'd be like silver started at 250 and going to 18. I mean, silver went from, 14 to 20. So you made the equivalent of silver going from like 14 to 100 bucks, percentage-wise. So this is why I still advocate, well-chosen stocks timed correctly can make you a lot more than the physical itself. Now, I'm not going to back out and say I don't recommend what I have always recommended, start your metals portfolio with physical metal. I'm not backing off of that position. What I'm trying to point out is, once that's established, if you want to take advantage of the banker, so to speak, or the market, maybe would be a better way to express it, you've got to involve yourself in situations that work best for you. So, having said that, 2016 tapered off to the end of the year, and then we got a nice rally again in the beginning of 2017, going from roughly the 1550 mark all the way up to about 18 and a half, and then it stalled out. It's been going downward to sideways ever since. So I was hopeful that 2017 would build upon 2016, and it has not. I saw the bottom just a couple of weeks ago. We've gone from about 1570 all the way to 17 in the near futures, and we're in a congestion area right now, and we need to break through that level, and I don't think it's going to break through right away. I think it will in January, but I think we're going to have to pause. But I think we will see, higher prices in 2018. I think we'll have a good year. I don't think we'll have a great year. A lot, needs to be determined. I'm very good at letting the market tell me, not me tell the market. And what we need to see, of course, is a break above 1350 gold and for it to hold above there. And gold's being the leader this time. There's no question about that. So if gold is leading and makes that 1350 level and maintains it, then I think you'll see the gold-silver ratio come down drastically and silver shoot up along with gold and kind of play catch-up to it. I don't know where we're going to get in 2018 yet. I mean, can we get back to the 21 level, let's say, that we spiked at in 2016? And the answer is maybe. I don't know. There's so many variables out there. I'm tired of saying it, Chris. I'd be remiss if I didn't, that currency debasements, the currency wars, the crypto space putting pressure on people thinking about what is the value of a fiat dollar or a fiat yen or a fiat euro. And so a lot can happen in 2018. And then if you go back to the 1988 Economist cover with the Phoenix having burning currency at its feet with a medallion around its neck and saying, get ready for one world currency, and it's 2018, that gives you pause. So there's a lot to look forward to this year, a lot of uncertainty, and yet a lot of, let's say, interesting times.
Yeah, exactly. May you never live in interesting times. I mean, we can argue fundamentals all day long. We can discuss technicals. We can talk about the inverted head and shoulders that's building up in the weekly chart that's just screaming to send silver over 20. But I think in the final analysis, it doesn't take quant rocket scientists to realize U.S. stocks are the antithesis of the precious metals. I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, the correlation is just beautifully negative. They offset each other, skeptical on any rally, any major rally, until I see U.S. equities, this national fervor. And until that trend, that theme reverses, I think it's going to give us subdued gains. But that being said, I haven't lost my passion for the metals. I view it as, you know, the safety net, the insurance policy, the anchor for the portfolio. That is really the libertarian ideology, is it not? You promised us when we started the Constitution to have sound money. You saw what happened in France and all throughout Europe for 100 years, endless poverty, boom, bust, just absolute chaos leading to the Corsican dictator, all right, who we all admire his abilities as a general, but we don't want something like that here. That's one key aspect, but I think this is even deeper than that. In fact, I applaud our policymakers for not adopting, not embracing Bitcoin and crypto and belittling it and relegating it to commodity status, because they could have very easily said, no, wait a minute, Bitcoin is a currency. As such, we're not going to have any competing currency. What we have is a great opportunity to take back personal freedoms. And here's an example. I read an interesting article just yesterday that said the biggest problem that the mainstream media has with Bitcoin, the wrong people are getting rich. And the greatest thing of all, I think, and you alluded to this, is that there is a limited supply. There are only 16.8 million Bitcoin outstanding. I think 10 to 20% are now lost, although the official number is 10%. That's roughly, if you go by my number, 3 million Bitcoins lost. We will not finish mining the blockchain until 2040, as you probably know. So that's a good ways off. But of course, difficulties going up soon and halving will occur in 2020. So what we have here, I think, is an amazing experiment, an opportunity for the United States and for the world to have its own currency that is unregulated and it's decentralized, because there is no key individual. There are no offices. This is decentralized just as the internet was decentralized. Email is decentralized, and how that changed everything. That's one, I think, important aspect of it. And the other is it levels the playing field. Right now, there are over 3 billion people in this world, meaning India, Southeast Asia, Africa, the Southern Hemisphere, Spanish America, and many other lower developed places, Venezuela, which used to be the gem of, you know, South America, because the people have plenty of electricity, but they don't have any income. 3 billion people do not have access to checking accounts, brokerage accounts, any type of financing, any type of mortgages, any type of leverage, debt, the ability to start a business. You have a means of transferring money. You have a credit card. You have everything you need, and it costs you nothing. You can plug it in at the local coffee shop.
Absolutely. There's so many that are unbanked. And now with the younger generation, they don't want to go to a bank and fill out a bunch of forms and get their thumbprint and all that stuff. They just want to get on their smartphone, tell them what their phone number is, tell them their first name, and create a password. It takes about 2 minutes, and now they have a platform that they can transact. And it's exactly what you were saying. I just stated it, then come back at me. And this is huge, because you've got that 2 billion unbanked people that all of a sudden sit in Mumbai or Africa or whatever, where before there's no bank within, you know, hundreds of miles, and these people are making transactions over their phone peer-to-peer all day long. Substantial shift. And we older folks better get used to it, whether you love Bitcoin, hate Bitcoin, or whatever. And when I say Bitcoin, I'm using it more or less as a metaphor for the whole blockchain space.
Can you also see a time where government is disrupted, where we see a decentralization of government primarily through the blockchain? Imagine endless tedious hours of waste. The financial sector is the first to fall, the first domino to fall, and the next will be centralized government.
Well, I have given that a fair amount of thought, and I agree. I think that governments have already been failing globally, and that this will accelerate it, because the power of the purse is power. I mean, you know, one of my main premises that I started on the internet is about money's power, and that money is a form of control. And that's all centralized through the international banking cartel. And you take that away from them, and they're not going to go down easy. Believe me, most of the time in a, whatever the scenario is, hyperinflation, deflation, currency collapse, or whatever, the banks seldom lose. So if this gets to be significant enough, and I think it's starting to get to that point where they really are challenged, then you're going to see some pushback by them. But no, absolutely. It's, you know, the long-term perspective is greater freedom. And that's hard to believe with the Internet of Things and tracking everything you do. And that's why I still have the concern that I expressed earlier in the interview, is that is it truly decentralized? If it is, absolutely, you can take down the power structure as we know it today. If it isn't, and everything is on the blockchain and there is some centralization that takes place, let's say through the exchanges, where someone's got to go to the exchange. In most cases, I mean, you can go peer-to-peer. I understand that. But outside of going peer-to-peer, if you go to the exchange and you say, hey, I'm XYZ, I verified who I am, and I bought, you know, Ethereum, at some point, that's centralized at that exchange. And so you have to be careful. I love the idea of being decentralized. I love the idea of being totally anonymous. I love the idea of people dictating what they want to do without a lot of interference. I love all those things. But whether or not that's the reality or not, I'm still biding my time and observing.
Yeah, I think it's well said, because there really are times where we would want our officials to have access. Of course, as we talked earlier, the potential for terrorism and the financing of that is always an issue. Just see the movie with Samuel L. Jackson. As we wrap up here, really wanted to talk about the importance of security. I know we've covered a lot of the bases, but we haven't really talked about how people just don't realize. I mean, look at John McAfee, the founder of the McAfee Security. He has just gone on record saying the number one issue for the next 10 years will be our security, that iPhones and Androids are completely hackable in public. I think I mentioned to you there's a neat new product that everyone should own, radio frequency and RF and related blocker, that just a pouch you put your iPhone and Android into, or iPad, pop it into the thing, close the top and hook it on your belt and go. So that while you're walking in a mall or at work or whatnot with a little radio like telescope hooked into his laptop, isn't picking your credit card and Bitcoin wallets and passwords and things of that nature. Give us an idea about security. I know you're following it.
Well, I am at a top-down level. Again, it's not my expertise, but I have followed this space for a while. And what scares me the most is reiterating what you said, that the top people like the McAfees, and I know he's very controversial, but you know, you look at the tops, like the Googles and anyone in the, you know, Netscape. I mean, all these people that are involved with huge internet enterprises and all the cryptocurrency space are all concerned about security. All of them. And this was from a lecture. I forget what the lecture's title was, but it's basically the thought leaders, CEOs, men and women that meet, I think it's in the Silicon Valley, and I don't even know if it's on an annual basis, but it's basically a forum for the top level thinkers and the top companies to gather and have a powwow about what's going on in their industry. And every one of them, to man and woman, said, this is great, that's great, this is going to happen, we're going to accelerate this, blah, 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 blah. And almost all of them mentioned that security is a concern. And they said it kind of off the cuff, and sort of at the end of the speech, that security is a concern. Well, security, without being secure in your transactions or in your wallet or whatever it is that you're doing, or even just in your bank account. I mean, look at how many just, you know, everyday bankers and, you know, some, I'll use this as a metaphor and I'll get off the soapbox, but it absolutely needs to be addressed. So, you know, you got some lady that's a widow and she's 60 years old, let's say, and she's talked into the banking by her banker to get online. So she gets online, she picks a password, and now she has the luxury of paying her phone bill over the internet or, you know, whatever else over the internet. It all looks good, and it's all good in a way. It's convenient. It saves time. You don't have to, you know, drive to the bank. But yet she gets hacked by somebody, and all of a sudden her bank. So that's in just the conventional, let alone what's going on with this Internet of Things idea. So I, again, think that it's under talked about. I think it's under expressed. But talk to somebody that's had their, you know, wallet ripped off or a bank account issue, like I just mentioned, their identity stolen or whatever. Or me, I'll give you one real quick one story. Going to London several times, I've been ripped off in the London airport twice just by walking around with my credit card in my pocket. And in those days, and they still do this, they have these little readers, as you mentioned, and they'll get your credit card, and then they'll basically make purchases off of that card. Well, the first time I did it, I had $8,000 worth of flights to Dubai. And it took me quite a while to get that money back from my bank. And, of course, I learned the hard way because it happened twice, different years. And now I have a, what's called a Z-Clip. You can look it up on the Internet. I'm not getting paid for this. But I bought the Z-Clip, which actually protects the magnetic strip on your credit or debit cards from being taken from you inadvertently as you're walking around, as you say, the shopping mall. So that's another area. So this stuff does happen. I'm not making this up, and it's a real-world situation that very few people are really aware of.
Just this year, as I grew more interested in crypto, started to make a much more frequent publishing and interviews with top folks in the field, which, of course, I mean, it has global reach. So I was instantaneously hacked from multiple directions simultaneously. I mean, it's a little funny, actually. People will laugh, but several people treated themselves to pizzas in San Antonio, Southern Florida, things of that nature. Now, Bank of America caught it pretty quickly when the big purchases started to go through. They reversed most of it. I think I ended up just buying some nice folks some dinner. But that's a big thing. And really, there is a way around this. What you want is a couple of apps. Firstly, I highly recommend everyone use nothing but Google Chrome. Yes, I know there's a transition period. You're used to using Internet Explorer. And download the GAuth, Google Authenticator. What they do is every 30 seconds, the numbers change given your private key. And so when you're trying to log into your crypto place or your bank account, you have to use a new number that's randomly chosen by Google. This is the world we live in. It's really that serious. And I can foresee a time when we'll each have to have a private key randomizer. They already have right now. And you plug that into a USB device, and that will create randomly 6,000 passwords a second through some other randomizing process. Prime factorization, of course, give you this dynamic passcode. We're already starting to see that now. Also, for people that are concerned about this and what David brought up, I highly recommend Cyber War. You can find this fantastic program, two or three seasons now, covering all these issues and much more, from cryptos to every type of security thing you can think of. So you can find that at Amazon. Stream it.
Recommend that, give a lot of information out for free. So it behooves everybody that listens to the show to be aware of a couple things. One is that I do a podcast every week, sometimes with permission, like, you know, Chris, if you give us permission, we'll put this on our podcast as well. But just go to iTunes and type in the Morning Report and find our podcast. I don't know how to do it on Android, but I'm sure everyone out there is smart enough to figure that out. The Weekly Perspective is about 15 minutes or less. I try to just pound it with the most important financial news that week. And then I always summarize with the precious metals, some comments on that. Further, if you go to themorganreport.com, which we rebranded a few years back, sign up and get the free Richardson Resources Report. You tuned in, and we every week send out something for free that's of value for everybody in the space, and we don't just stick to gold and silver. We cover all the commodities, less the energy sector. And the interesting things like what's coming up with this melding of the cryptocurrency / precious metals, which has yet to be tested. I know you have one, others out there. Very interesting time. I really think that the people that are waking up and those that are awake are seeking something that is outside of the purview of government, or let's say central bank control, because the Federal Reserve really isn't federal, as we all know. The government actually doesn't print money, it's the Federal Reserve. The fact is that the government has to borrow the money, and they borrow it from a bunch of private bankers. I mean, the Federal Reserve is a private corporation, and I mean private. We don't really know who are the big owners now. Have a pretty good idea that, the Warburgs and the Rothschilds and, some of the main players back in 1913 when the quote-unquote law was enacted illegally, I might add, just took place. So that's who you borrow money. And who's on the hook to pay it back? This is sheer blood, sweat, and tears that have to pay back not only the principal, but the interest. And all this is created out of thin air. And a lot of people that have caught on to that scam are tired. they were looking for an alternative. And then Bitcoin / cryptocurrency is just one aspect of an alternative. People are seeking that, are waking up.
So I want to wish you a very happy new year.
Thanks for having me.